So yesterday I didn't finish the purports of Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter 29, talks between Narada and King Pachinabari, text 55. Satvam vichaksha mrigachastitam atmon atmanantas chintam niyacharidi karnadunim chachitte jayam ganasramam asatamayuta gatam priniham sasaranam viramakamena. Translation. My dear king, just try to understand the allegorical position of the deer. Be fully conscious of yourself and give up the pleasure of hearing about promotion to heavenly planets by fruit of activity. Give up household life, which is full of sex, as well as stories about such things, and take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the mercy of the liberated souls. In this way, please give up your attraction for material existence. Purport continued. A Paramahamsa is one who has taken shelter of the Parabrahman, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one takes shelter of the Paramahamsa spiritual master, gradually through training and instruction, he will become detached from worldly life and ultimately return home back to Godhead. The particular mention of Anguna Asramam Asattama Yutta Gatam is very interesting. The whole world is in the clutches of Maya, being controlled by a woman. Not only is one controlled by the woman who is one's wife, but one is also controlled by so many sex literature. That is the cause of one's being entangled in the material world. One cannot give up this abominable association through one's own effort, but if one takes shelter of a bona fide spiritual master who is a Paramahansa, he will gradually be elevated to the platform of spiritual life. Purport continues. So, sometimes in Srila Prabhupada's purports, you find these things. The whole world is in the clutches of Maya, being controlled by woman, which is sometimes discouraging to the ladies in our movement. You know, like the women are being depicted as a problem. Then goes on. Not only is one controlled by the woman who is one's wife, but one is also controlled by so many sex literatures, and all sounds not so positive. But then Prabhupada, when Vishakha, Prabhupada's disciple Vishakha, asked that question to Prabhupada, then Prabhupada said that Vaishnavi is not woman. No? It's referring to the mundane situation. But it also is referring to tendencies to look for happiness in this world, tendencies to settle down and to think, yes, there is happiness in the material world. Whereas the Paramahansa is obviously very clear about that. There is no happiness in the material world. It's an illusion. That doesn't mean that we are voluntarily looking for suffering in the material world and that we're aiming to suffer as much as possible. No, we understand what is comfort, and a certain amount of comfort is permissible. Even the sages in the forest used to sit on a deer skin. That's comfort. It also protected them from snakes, because it says that deers have a natural substance in the skin that chases away snakes. So in this way, they also made some arrangements. Sanatan Goswami was chastising Raghunath Das, who was sitting there at the bank of Radha Kund and didn't have any shelter. And we know that Radharani came personally and stood there with the tip of her sari shading him. And then Sanatan Goswami and noticed all that. And then he said, now it's time to build a hut. Your renunciation is now getting too much. You know, you cannot engage Radharani in the service. I mean, that's not possible. So in this way, whether one is renounced or whether one is not renounced, one has to make arrangements in this world. So there is nothing against a certain level of comfort, but everything in this world has a price to pay. You get nothing for nothing. Everything has strings attached. And these strings attached can be very entangling. I remember that in the past when I stayed also in this little Amsterdam temple, that at one point they wanted to charge us for television charges. Right? And said, we don't watch television. And they said, it doesn't matter. You have the right to watch television. You have to pay for that. You have to pay for the right. And that was too much. You know, it was like they make you pay for a television which you don't have. You don't want to watch. But you have the right. So in this way, everything has strings attached to it in the material world. Nothing comes by itself. That is the nature of the material energy. Material energy always has a relationship with other things. You have a house, and then you have to paint, and then you have to repair it, then you have to do so many things that are attached to that, and before you know it, you need to call, and then you need a telephone, and then you have a telephone, but then, you know, there are other complications coming from the telephone. The end. It is urdamulam adasakkam ashvatama prahuravyayam. It is that banyan tree that is described in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which is upside down and so many branches, and off each branch new roots are coming, and it's the entanglement of material existence. Like in the Calcutta Botanical Gardens, there is an enormous banyan tree, and it is one tree, and it is so big, and you can just go inside, right, in the network of, because banyan trees have air roots that go in the tree, in the ground as well, and in the end, you know, you can no longer see what is the original trunk. New air roots have wrapped around air roots, and they look like trunks, and it all looks like the trunk. And you walk through this tree, amazing tree. So the entanglement of the banyan tree is like that, or the entanglement of the material energy. But the Paramahansa is ready to cut that banyan tree at the root, because the root is the desire for happiness in the material world. That is the issue. So as devotees, we are not so concerned. Comfort, yes. Some nice tasting prasadam and so on, yes. But there's nothing to stay in the material world for, other than service of Krishna. That is important. And that one has to thoroughly appreciate. And that's Paramahansa. And that is why Paramahansa is compared to a swan. A swan who can, so they say, can separate milk from water. If you pour milk into the water, the swan is supposed to be able to drink the milk and not the water. There are swans nearby here. And if you want, you can test it out and see if it works. Let me know. I've always wanted to test it, but never had a swan nearby and milk. You know, when you have the swan, you don't have the milk. And when you have the milk, you don't have the swan. But that's the material world. Always things get complicated. But the Paramahansa is therefore nirapeksha. He is not affected by the material world. And of course, once Srila Prabhupada in the evening sat down to translate, and he invited one of his disciples to sit next to him. And it was about 10:45 or something, late. And so Prabhupada said, invited him to sit down and while he was translating. And he said, "Oh, Srila Prabhupada, I have to take rest. It's very late now. So I'm really tired. I need to take rest." Prabhupada said, "But I'm not taking rest." And then he said, "Yes, but you are a Paramahansa." And then Prabhupada said, "Why are you not a Paramahansa?" So everyone is meant to be Paramahansa. It's not that we can say, well, Prabhupada has to be the Paramahansa. Sometimes we are raising the pure devotee or a devotee so high, that he becomes unapproachable. Like we can glorify Prabhupada to a point where Prabhupada is superhuman, and where it's like no one can do what he did, and it's so amazing. And in a way, of course, he did the most extraordinary thing, but the point is everyone can be a pure devotee, and that's the idea. We also, but in our own way, you can see Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur having a nice ceiling fan which was running on kerosene in his house in Sarup Ganj in Mayapur. So that looks like sense gratification. That's all right. There's no problem. So according to our own needs, we may have, but purity is required. So that means that one must be ready to adjust his life according to the prescribed activities and the activities prescribed in the Shastra. And that we have to practice. So that is devotee. Devotee begins to practice of how you're supposed to do it, and we're adjusting to that. In the beginning, we struggle a little, but we at least fix the major things, four regulative principles, 16 rounds, and then later we will also get into more refined principles, and then one can get second initiation. And in that second initiation, then one is meant to follow the rules and regulations. So, I'll read a little more of the purport. Try and finish it today. The pleasing words of the Vedas that inspire one to elevate oneself to the heavenly planets or emerge into the existence of the Supreme are for the less intelligent, who are described in Bhagavad Gita as Maya Paripigyala. Those whose knowledge is taken away by the illusory energy. Real knowledge means understanding the miserable condition of material life. One should take shelter of a bona fide liberated soul, spiritual master, and gradually elevate himself to the spiritual platform and thus become detached from the material world. Yeah, but of course, not that we are always walking around remembering how miserable the material world is. It's so miserable, it's so depressing, it's just a place where there's no happiness, you cannot enjoy here, don't even try. We are positive. Basically, there are three levels: karma, jnana, and bhakti. So on the level of karma, there is karma yoga, where one can engage his personal desires, like to engage the senses, but we engage in connecting with Krishna. So we do it with Krishna. Like For example, someone, there's one devotee, he likes to drive. He always likes to drive. So he's a driver for Krishna. And he drives a car. Or when he doesn't drive a car, then he's driving a lawnmower. You know, he has like one lawnmower. And he's just like, or when he wasn't driving that, then he was driving a crane. But he's always driving something. You know? He has to drive. That's just his nature. He's a driver. But he drives for Krishna. So that's in a way karma yoga, where you are doing that what you want to do with the material energy, and you do it for Krishna. So that's part of our process. Then there is jnana yoga. So in jnana yoga, you remind yourself the material world is this, there's no enjoyment, there's no happiness, it's all illusory energy, etc. And it's all temporary. Dukkhalayam asaswatam, a place of misery where everything is temporary. And so that you remind yourself. So when you see some really attractive material situation, then you sort of preach to yourself. That's jnana yoga. So you preach to yourself about the temporary nature of things. And then there's bhakti. Then there's pure bhakti, just serving Krishna. So we are engaging on all these three levels at the same time, as conditioned souls. We have engagement on all these three levels. We do pure bhakti, pure devotional activities. We are also reminding ourselves that this is all temporary. This is actually the illusory energy. This is maya. It's not what you think it is. We remind ourselves of that. And at the same time, we're engaging our propensities. And then gradually, we lose all taste for doing things according to some material propensity, and we care only for Krishna. And then our karma yoga has become purified and has become pure bhakti. And gradually, we are automatically no longer interested in maya because we've become attached to Krishna. As you are getting more and more attached to Krishna, you'll automatically be detached from the material world, and then you don't have to preach to yourself anymore. So that detachment that comes from jnana yoga then automatically is achieved. Bhakti parisana bhava virakti anyata chesa trike ikakala prapadamana syata shus tushti pushti ksu anukasam, which means that the eating process, as you are full, then you don't feel like eating anymore. Therefore, when we are full of the happiness from serving Krishna, we're no longer interested in the happiness of the material world. Then we don't need to philosophically all the time, you know, preach to ourselves. Right? When you're terribly attracted to the material energy, then you have to constantly preach to yourself, oh, it's not as good as it looks. It's like, you know, I told, like one brahmachari, he's quite young, he saw this beautiful girl, right? And his heart was beating in his throat. And then I told him, look at her mother. Right? Just look at her mother. Then you know what she will become like. Right? And when he saw the mother, then it worked. He lost all attraction. So that's jnana yoga. That's jnana yoga. You know, look at the mother. And we have so many such things, you know. Look at that handsome prince, right, who's coming around the corner, and his handsome face and everything. But just think about it. He's wearing a mask. He's wearing a mask. He's wearing a mask of skin. And behind that mask is death. And if you just look at people's faces, they're all masks, wearing a mask. And behind that mask is the face of death. So you're about to embrace death. if you think about it. So like this, that's all in the realm of Jnana Yoga, which we use to preach to ourselves when we're getting too much attracted to the material energy in the bodies, you know. Then we can preach to ourselves like that. And you used to get these classes, you know, these Bhagavatam classes in Australia, I remember.
You know, but what if you turn the body inside out, man? You know, would you like to squeeze the liver, right? Yeah? Would you like to, you know, hug it and all the organs? Imagine, you turn it inside out and all the organs are hanging on the outside, you know? Would you like to hug it, right, mate? Would you like to kiss it? You know, we get classes like that. So
this is all in the realm of Gyan, you know, how we are trying to get out of here, you know? These classes never worked for me, you know what I mean? The stool classes and, you know, and all those things. So I always said, I don't care, as long as... And they go like, you know, it's just a bag full of blood and stool and all these things. They go like, yeah, but the skin on the outside is very nice and soft. So as long as the skin on the outside is nice and soft, then, you know, I don't care what's inside. my sinful mind didn't care what's inside. So that didn't work so much for me, these kind of classes. They never did it. But they seem to work for some people for a while. So for a while. But the point is this, is that we cannot immediately, you know, love Krishna and do everything out of pure love for Krishna. Yeah, do you love Krishna? Yeah, a little bit. But we love ourselves much more. And that's the difficulty. We have some. Krishna's nice. Very nice. He's blue. Plays the flute quite good. But, so, all these things work to some extent, and that's why devotees fall down. In spite of having transcendental knowledge, in spite of having devotional practice, and so on. The neophyte, the new devotee, he is a critical fault finder, because he's seeing the standard of the scripture, and he's saying everyone should be up to that level. Right? Of course, he himself is not up to that level, but that he excuses himself because I'm new, so I'm not expected to be perfect yet, you know, but I'm new. But from others who are more experienced, he expects that they are following. But actually we're all realizing that we're falling short. There are people who say, we're not following Prabhupada, you know. Prabhupada, we're not following Prabhupada. Well, you go follow Prabhupada, you know. See if you can, you know. I mean, everybody gets confronted with their limitations very quickly in spiritual life. Everyone is going to find some difficulty. There is what I call the silent fall down. The one that is never spoken about, the one that remains hidden, but the one that is there, and the one that goes on, that one. That's part of the problem. So we are not there to condemn people, we are there to understand, and we are there to try and help people to rise above, through association, through a program, because obviously I have sometimes explained that, like, if you put a wooden pole in the sand, right, it will not stand on its own. It will not stand very long. It needs some support. You know, just like a mast on a ship, you know, it has lines on it, right, to hold it in position. It doesn't stand by itself. It has lines on all sides, yes, to keep it in position. So in the same way, the regulative principles or our vows don't stand on their own. they stand by support. And therefore you can say Krishna consciousness is very simple. 16 rounds and 4 regulative principles. Yeah, but in order to do that, you have to do so many things. In order to maintain that, you need to be with devotees. You need to be in a place where there is where things are reminding you of Krishna. That's why it's recommended that householders have deities at home, so that when they can't go to the temple, that they have a temple at home, that they do some worship at home, and so on, and so on, and so on. Because we need to do many things to keep these vows. So that's there. And that is why we need a temple, and that is why devotees have to come to a temple. And if they don't have time for a temple, then they're doomed. I'm sorry to use such a heavy word, but then they're doomed to fall down. And then the silent fall down will become become part of our life. The thing is with fall down, if it happens once, it is bad, depressing. If it happens twice, then the problem is that it may become regular. And once a fall down has become regular, then you get defeatism, where you are defeated. Then you are defeated. And once you are defeated, then, it becomes a way of life, So being depressed becomes a permanent state, a certain level of depression, because I failed in my life. I didn't live up to the idea. And then what is needed is justification. Anyway, I can't just walk around, feeling guilty all the time. I mean, it's too much, Actually, it's not such a big deal, that I am not following these principles, because actually nobody's following these principles. I mean, practically speaking, the whole movement is not following these principles. So that's justification, just to relieve the guilt, to feel a little better. So all that is very much part of the dynamics in our movement. We can rise above it by putting a strong spiritual program in place, and then by regular contact with the scripture, and then by preaching to ourselves. Then we can create a culture for rising above. So spiritual life is about anyabhilasita sunyam jnana karma anavridam krishna anushilanam. There is Krishna anushilanam, that cultivation, a culture is required. Prabhupada said this Krishna consciousness is a cultural conquest. We conquer through a culture, because without the culture, then the support basis is not there. How are we going to do it? On determination alone? I shall do it. I will do it. No. Therefore, if someone says, and he wants to be initiated, and say, yeah, but how are you going to follow all these principles for your life? No, I will do it. No, I will do it. Not good enough. No, that's not going to work. We need a culture. And you can tell yourself, no, I'm going to do it. I'm really going to do it now. I didn't do it in the past, but now I'm more serious. Come on, that's like New Year's, like every New Year. And so many promises. And how long will they last? 2nd of January? 3rd of January? Then it's over. So, like this, that's not going to work. Therefore, the spiritual master wants to see that people are practicing. And we have to... it begins from the temple, and it has to filter down all the way into the congregation. Like Radhanath Maharaj, his glory is that he started that congregational program, and he started spiritual care for congregational devotees, somehow or another, trying to make sure that everybody is doing these, is part of this culture of practicing these support activities. And that had a certain degree of success. I don't know how high, you know what I mean? There will be also silent fall down in that area. But obviously there is success, and that is something that the whole movement can take, and something we should preach about. We should make it clear to our, first of all, to ourselves, that I not be in the illusion that we are above. You know, as soon as one starts thinking, I'm okay, then you're in problem, then you're in trouble. As soon as we think that we are not the residents of Kali Yuga, we have to understand we are residents of Kali Yuga. We are inherently weak. That's our constitutional position. Everyone is weak because we're from Kali Yuga. Therefore, we need shelter. I sometimes say, the strong devotees, they don't need to go to Mongol Arctic. It's the weak devotees. Mongol Arctic is for the weak devotees. So, yeah, these things are some of the considerations. We can gradually build up strength by putting the iron in the fire. It will become fire. It's not fire on its own. We are not fire. We are not spiritual. It's not that some people are spiritually strong by nature. Yeah, there may be some difference. Some are very, very weak, and some are just weak. But everyone is weak, and everyone has to really take shelter in some way or other. That is, and that awareness is forgotten. So, in the beginning, our movement was also starting from storefronts, just as here in Amsterdam. But at that time, they were just making new devotees, and they would all move into the temple. And there was just no congregation. The whole concept of congregation that came much later. We never had a congregation. Never. We would distribute books to unknown people. We'd sell them a book, and they'd disappear again. And then some people would just come out of the crowd and would say, I want to join the temple. So there was no such thing as like the concept of congregation. We didn't have that. I can't remember that ever like the idea, and then gradually the concept that there was a regular group of people who were sort of connected to a temple and so on, that there was a congregation, that gradually became a concept. And then you had to do things with them. My God, you know? They had needs. Whereas, like, you know, we thought, like, either you're a devotee or a demon. So, either you move in the temple and you are a devotee, or you're a demon. And people that came to the Sunday feast, they were basically meant to become devotees. Or some of them were just too demoniac. And that's basically what it was. Right? And it's like, you know. So we were not interested in people who were like trying to come regularly to the Sunday feast, if they didn't join. And we thought, like, you know, they're useless. We thought. And people that would not join the temple, we thought they were useless. Yeah. Only people that joined the temple. So the Sunday feast was just another way to make people join the temple. Yeah. And that's how it was for many years. And I guess somewhere in the mid-80s, or early 80s, whatever, the concept of a congregation began to dawn upon us, that there was such a thing. Yeah. It's like, my God, you know? I mean, there are people who are going to be involved in Krishna consciousness, and they're kind of going to come regularly, but they're never going to move into a temple. And that was unheard of, outrageous. Yeah, that's what. And we had a Sunday feast, and a temple full of devotees. So we had as many devotees or more than guests. So every guest had one devotee. We'd sit them in rows on the floor, and one devotee would sit opposite of the guests. And then other devotees would serve. And then you're not the body and you're not the eternal spirit soul. You realize that. And therefore, you know, like, all this sense enjoyment is actually simply relating to the body, and you're not that body. Therefore, you should really, like, give up the sense gratification. Why don't you join? That's what you would say in some of the things. Well, why don't you join? Swallowing his pakora, and meanwhile, why don't you join? That's just how it was. So things have evolved from there a bit. But we did make a lot of devotees. A lot. People did join. It's like they did it to me also. I also came to the Sunday feast, and actually, I had been already staying in a temple in Vrindavan, and I had become sick, with jaundice, and I had just been on my bed for 5 months. So, you know, I did that outside the temple because I didn't think the temple was the best place to be sick. So then, when I start getting better, then I went to a Sunday feast. And then immediately they my hair was still short, but they treated me like a guest, right? So immediately, well, you're not the body, you know, there's no sense gamification, why don't you move in? Why don't you join the temple? So it's like, well, I was in the temple in Vrindavan, but I became ill, you know, like I had jaundice. I was like very ill for 5 months. Oh, so you blooped? No, I was ill, right? But in those days, even when you're ill and you stay outside the temple, that meant you had blooped. So, okay. So then it's like, well, when are you going to move in? When are you moving in? Immediately, you put the pressure on me. When are you moving in? It's like, well, you know, it's like, maybe I'll first check with the doctor that it's really okay, because it's been 5 months on the bed, you know. So then it's like, I saw this prayer. So then I did move in a few weeks later. And so much pressure. But then we went to the congregational model, where no one would move in, and where temples had more deities than devotees. And where everybody just in his own house, chanting Hare Krishna, hopefully, and following principles, some are doing it, absolutely. And there are people, and there are, and so on. And there really are. I'm not joking. There are. You may not believe me, but they really are. So in this way, and what are we going to do now with our empty temples? Now temples have become like dead horses that are hard to, you know. In English, you call it dead horse, beating a dead horse, they say. You know, you try to write, and dead horse, you know. Dead, you know. It's not going to move. Go. Ramachandra's like this one. Shamanandini is studying the Brahmacharya. It's another species, Brahmacharya. She has this little quote of friends. Just waiting a while. But the dead whore is not moving, so there are many temples like that.
Right?
And then, then you get new people that join and they don't feel they're part of a dynamic movement, you know. I mean, when we joined a temple, we felt that we're part of, we're making a difference, we're changing the world, you know. I mean, we're really like changing the world. Now you join a temple and, you know, you sort of feel like, the mold is growing on the walls. The pots haven't been washed for 6 months, and God knows what lives in there. You know, there are a lot more mice and rats living in the temple than the devotees, and things like that. And you look at it all, is it even possible? And it seems that nobody is interested. And we give lectures, good morning walls. So, we have to break that also in somehow or other. Somehow or other. Have full faith that people are hankering to be devotees. Just yesterday in the morning, I was walking, and one person, right, really, somehow or other, stood like right opposite of me because of the people. The streets were very crowded, and this person was like, 15 centimeters face to face, you know, and a real deep, penetrating look. And I could see this person wants to be a devotee. And is checking me out. He's actually checking me out. Yeah? It's like he was someone who was lost looking for answers. And checking me out. Does he have answers? Does he know? Yeah? I could see that. And there's lots of people like that out there who look at us, right? Who say Hare Krishna, who fold their hands, you know, who just look at us and just think, do they know? Do they have the answers? There's no doubt about it. There are many people, actually, who can be convinced. And the books, they will bring people. People will come out of nowhere. That's how it works. So like that, we can go forward again. Okay, questions? Comments? Don't be shy. Bring your own. Yep.
I'd like to know what is happening on the ISKCON level about this situation, about the entertainment culture, and
what is kind of thing now for this congregation. I'm not sure. What's happening on the ISKCON level about empty temples? Well, different programs, you know, like Jagatak Marx tried congregational preaching and really put a lot of energy in there and did something with that. Others have I'm trying. ISKCON's keeping temples open, but I guess, you know, a lot of the energy is defensive, you know, or directed towards solving problems. Yeah. And that's, then you don't get out of the soup. If you just spend your time solving problems, then that's not enough. So what should be done is we should like start to do a lot of positive things and at the same time solve some problems. But if you have 100 problems, you know, solve some. You can't solve them all. Don't worry about that, you know. Just somehow or other live with them, right? And little by little fix it if you can. But start to do positive things. We should do lots of positive inspirational activity, both for our devotees and for outreach. We should mix with a lot of people. Like a city like this, you know, where all big cities have many levels of people, and you can get in on many levels. You see, like, you know, how some people, okay, even Rita Maharaj started his loft program or urban yoga, as he calls it sometimes, and it was successful in many places. Well, that's something to take note of, obviously. So we can reach out to different people in different approaches, but we need a dynamic approach. Some have said that a lot of preaching is much easier outside the temples. Go to people's homes. It's definitely a time where, since there are already many people that are somehow or other a little affected by Krishna consciousness, go to their home. Because you'll find that amongst their friends, there may be some on the same wavelength, and you'll get them as well. And in this way, you really reach to many people. So home programs are powerful preaching. And you just, you know, you take the people from the Sunday feast, and you just, and instead of just, you know, going on week after week with the same people in the same Sunday feast, you say, no, we want to do a program in the house of everybody. That is our endeavor. Right? And every week we'll go to someone's house. We've been to your house long ago. Yeah, I remember. We did a program there. You remember?
Yes.
Oh, it was good. I even did a program in Muktidachi's place when she still lived in the squat. Then she bhakti Mia, and then in the big squat house, and she arranged the program there. Went there also. Of course, we did it. We did a program there also, that was later, And we did, but we went to a house party here in Amsterdam. And, not a home program, but house music and the whole thing. And we came back with one less devotee than we went. That was not so good. That was bad.
What happened to the university preaching? We used to do that.
We used to do a lot. Suhotra, Swami, and myself. Well, Gauranga Premananda is very, very slick, as we all know. He's very tricky, and he knows how to get in. He rings them up very bold and goes like, "I have this leader, you know, really qualified leader of the Hare Krishna movement, and he's been lecturing all in universities all over the world, and we want to do a program, and You know, he rings up a student society and he says that there's an interesting program. There's a lecture. There's a 7-course meal. He calls it a 7-course meal. You know, it's only 7 preps. On a 5 preps, he calls it a 5-course meal. And he's really good in that way. And it was quite good. We used to go in, they'd get prasadam. We'd first give them prasadam, right? Then we'd have a little soft bhajan during the prasadam, background music. So that was taken care of. Then we'd have the lecture, and at the end, we give him the Upanishad, and he goes, "You can throw a donation in the box," and he would buy his Upanishads for 1 guild or 40. Right? And so we'd always get that. We'd always have a profit. So there were 4 things they'd get. And then later, when websites came in, then they got the website as well. So, good program. And so there's lots of things to do, but it takes a lot of people to do it all. The programs are there. It is not difficult. But who will do? Like tonight. It's the Thursday morning. Who will come?
I don't know. We will see.